Morning. Today's Daf Menachos Chaf Hey. We are in Chaf Dal Amud Beis. We are halfway down in the Amud. And just a couple more ideas if it starts first from yesterday's Daf, and then we move on, obviously, to today's Daf in a new sugya. Yesterday we introduced ourselves to the idea of it starts first, that when you put flour and oil on the kli, so that kli is going to be mitzarif. It'll combine everything and to create into a unified whole. And the question, the Gemara yesterday raised numerous questions regarding this idea of it's starfus. The opening of yesterday's daf dealt with three questions from the students of Rabbi Chiya to Rav Kahana, response by some questions from Rav Kahana back to the students of Rabbi Chiya. But numerous questions that were asked. One of the more fundamental questions that we asked in yesterday's daf was whether or not this idea was a din d'oraisa or was it a din d'rabban. Rashi explains yesterday that if it's a din d'oraisa, so it would work both the kula and the chumra, meaning that just because one of the particles or one of the halves of the yisarun is in the bowl, not touching the other half, but nevertheless it's going to transmit the tumma. But that could just simply be a din d'rabbanan. On the other hand, it could very well be that it's also a din d'orais as well. That if I do kmitza on one half, so that would serve and affect the other half as well. So that was one of the more fundamental questions the Gemara raised yesterday. The Gemara left most of the questions unresolved. It's a the idea of itstarfus is certainly an idea, just a question of the parameters and the applications of the idea of itstarfus is subject to some questioning. Amarav Yisarun. So we are right in the middle of Chavdal Medbeis, and just some more questions the Gemara entertains revolving around this idea of itstarfus. Let's say, says Rava, you have Yisarun Achas, Yisarun Shechalko. So let's say you have an Yisarun, you divide into two halves. Now, as we learned yesterday's daf, the Bryce in yesterday's daf tells us, you certainly can't put in two bowls. That's not open for discussion. The two halves of the yisarun have to be in one bowl. But what happened in this particular case is that you divided the two halves of the mincha, v'avad echad mehem, and you lost one of the halves, v'hifresh acher tachtav. And then so what you do is you replace it with the third half. So we have now three halves. And let's, for purpose of simplicity, let's call them A, B, and C. A is the original half that you the foundation, if you will, and then B was the one that was originally set aside for the first half. B was lost, and then C was the one that was the replacement half. But now you have all three, A, B, and C. V'nimtza harisha, v'arei shloshem menachem bebisa. And so now you have three halves. One half too many. In other words, as we learned already numerous times, standard mincha has one log of shemen and one isar and a flour. So you have now three halves. So it's one half too many. Nitma avud. So let's say now C becomes tame. Okay. So the not C. B. my whole point over here was to keep it simple. Okay. So nitma avud. So let's say B becomes tame. That's the half that you lost. So nitma avud. Avud verisha mitzarfin mufrash im mitzarfin. So now that you have A, B, and C, so you have a reunion of all three, and obviously it's three is a crowd. So there's a third wheel in there. So which one's the third wheel? So what Rava's now identifying is that really C is the third wheel. Because C was never in your original plan. Your original plan was A and B. The only reason why you got C is because you lost B, but somehow B got recovered. So you found B once again. So really, in terms of the original couple, if you will, the original couple is A and B. So A and B now really have this at surface. And that means to say now that if B becomes Tame, so B now is linked with A, so now B and A are unusable, C being fine. Nitma mufrash, mufrash v'risha mitzarfin, avad A mitzarfin. Now let's say C becomes Tame. Okay, so Rava says, so now C and A are Tame. C and A are Tame, I don't understand, who's C? So C is the one that you also set aside as a replacement in conjunction with A. So what Rava's basically doing is that he's looking at two relationships. He's looking at the relationship between A and B, and he's also looking at the relationship between A and C. So that if B becomes Tommy, so does A. If C becomes Tommy, so does A. Nitma Rishon. Nitma Rishon. Huh? No, all this can only occur. This idea can only be in the ball. Rishon, and that point will become very clear in just a moment. And Nitma Rishon, Shnei Mitztarfin. Now, if A becomes Tommy, or A has a relationship with B and with C. And so therefore, if A becomes Tommy, so does B and so does C. Okay. So Rava takes a really interesting way to look at the relationship between the second half and the third half, B and C, vis-a-vis the first half, and conversely, the relationship between A to B and to C. Now, Abaye Amar, Filo Nidma Echad Mehem, Nami Shnei Mitztarfin. So Abaye says, all this is too complicated in terms of relationships. And Abaye says, I'd like to look at it really simply. And that is, they're all in the same bowl together. Now, I understand that there's an extra half. I get that part. Okay, so there's an extra half. Ultimately, when all said and done, vis-a-vis the extra half, it's in the bowl now together with the other two. And therefore, Abaye says that if all three are in the same bowl together, there's itztarfus for all three. My taima, kula, b'nei, bikta, dehadadi, ninu. Because they all belong to the same. And as a result, they all are literally in the same bowl together. And just by virtue of the fact that they're in the same bowl together, so that immediately creates itztarfus. V'chein, le'inyan, kemitza. We're going to do the same thing once again, round two, of the same basic idea, but now we're going to go from Tuma over to Kemitza, like I introduced at the beginning of Shir today, like the Gemara entertained on yesterday's daf. Could be that Hitztarfus is just a Din D'Rabbanan, which just works against you, like we just learned together in Tuma. Could be that Hitztarfus is a Din D'Raisa, and it could look to help you in that even though they are divided in the bowl, but if I do Kemitza on one, it's going to work towards the other as well. So here now we're going to, same scenario, same setup, but now we're just looking for the perspective of Kemitza, not from Tuma. So v'chelin in Kemitza, kamatz mina avod shirav v'rishon nechalin. So let's say you did the Kemitza from B. So good. So now you did Kemitza from B. So now B is coupled together with A because that was the original pair, the first couple, if you will. So if I did the Kemitza from B, so now I can eat the shirayim of B and A, meaning B and A serve now as a fully saron for my mincha. Thereby, the kohen now could eat the shirayim of B and A. Mufrash eino nuch necha. However, C is odd man out over here, and I mean that literally. It's odd man out, meaning it's the third one. It's the third wheel. It wasn't the original. You took the kemitza from B, therefore you only can eat from B and A, not from C. Kametz mina mufrash. If you do kemitza from C, so shira v'rishon echalan avod eino necha. Now, if you did the kemitza from C, so now C is going to be paired with A, because C was serving as a replacement for A. And so since C is now coupled together with A, you did the kemitza on C, so now enjoy, the kohanim can now enjoy the shirayim of C and A. But of course not B. Kametz min rishon, shneim einan ne'echalen. Now, let's say you did the kemitza from A. Interestingly, so here you can eat the shirayim from A, but you can't eat from B and you can't eat from C. Because you can't eat from all three because the third half is excess. It's extra. So you're not eating the third half, but which one now is the third half? Now that we know there's a relationship and there are two existing relationships, one between A and B and one between A and C. So if I took a kemitza from B, I know B is only coupled with A. If I took a kemitza from C, I know C is only coupled with A. But once I take kemitza from A, so then I don't know whether we should be pairing it with B or with C. And as a result of that, so we eat from neither. We can't eat from both, therefore we eat from neither. So Abaye says, I think this suffix always exists, because Abaye basically asserts the same point that he made previously, which is the three have a relationship now by virtue of the fact that they're in the same bowl together. And therefore, so once you do kemitza from one, the kemitza is going on the other two, but again, the kohanim can't eat from the other two because that's one too many. In other words, now you're eating from three and that's one too many. So, and we don't know which one is the true relationship, and so therefore, you can only eat from the half that you did kemitza from, but not the other two. My taima, and again, the Gemara repeats the svar of Abaye, kulonami b'nei bikta di hadade nenu, because they're all sharing the same bowl together, and therefore, they are all connected. Fine. Maskel of Rapapa, vishiram didei mia nechalen. So, Rapapa says, okay, but according to you, Abaye, fine. I understand your basic svara, but you're arriving now at a really strange conclusion. You're doing the shirayim now on what? On a half of an isaron, because ultimately the other two you can't eat from. So you're doing a kemitza on only a half of an isaron. Well, that's no good. So the Gemara says, "Ha ika danka de kometz de lo kariv." There is part of the kemitza that you're not going to be eating from, meaning you're doing a kemitza on shirayim that you're not eating from. We've learned already numerous times that when you have to do a kemitza, you have to do it on a full shirayim. And now you're not doing it on a full shirayim. So maskav rav yitzchak bar yehuda misharsha v'kometz gufe hechikariv, e ika talasa chulin. Sorry, ha ika talasa chulin. So rav yitzchak says, well, I'll tell you what, I'll up the ante over here in terms of asking a question. You're wondering about the shirayim, how about the kemitza? Meaning you seem to be comfortable with the kemitza. How can I burn komets of shirayim if I don't know where the shirayim are? So if you're telling me that of the three halves, I can't eat two of the three halves, and now you're curious as to, well, how can I eat the one half shirayim when that's not a full shirayim? So then, let's just keep going. So then how can I even offer the kmitza if the kmitza is only be taking off half of a shirayim? Rav Ashi amar, komets bedait de kohen talia milsa. Bekon ki kamets, ayisarim ka kamets. So Rav Ashi answers basically both questions. And Rav Ashi says no. Look, when the kohen's doing kmitza, he's doing it on a full isarim. It happens to be, second half has two candidates. Okay, that may be true, and therefore you can't eat both. But when all said and done, you're doing a kmitza, the kohen's doing a kmitza on a full isaron. There are technical problems why he won't be able to eat the second isaron, but he is doing a kmitza on a full isaron. Therefore, says Rav Ashi, you can offer the kmitz. Again, this is all an explanation of Abaye. You can A, offer the kmitz, and B, sorry, I shouldn't be using the same lettering. That could be confusing. You should, one, be able to offer the kometz, and two, you should be able to eat the first half isaron that you took the kometz off of. Granted, you can't eat the other two, but that's just a technical reason. But when the kometz is done, it's done by the kohen on a full isaron. Adkan. Okay, so a number of interesting scenarios, again, playing off this idea of hitstarfus. We are on Chafei Amar Aleph. We're continuing in the Gemara. It's a new topic, new day, new topic. And today's topic is the tzitz being meratzah. It's a really interesting phenomenon. It's an interesting concept. Certainly difficult to understand conceptually how this works. But for our purposes today, all we need to know is that it works. Kohen Gadol is wearing various begadim. And the begadim of the Kohen Gadol are not just there to make him the Kohen Gadol, but the Gemara's numerous times, numerous places tells us that it also has effects regarding a carbon. And notably, the tzitz, that's the headplate worn by the Kohen, which has the words Kodesh LaHashem inscripted on them, actually engraved into them. So the tzitz is able to create ritzui, meaning it's able to take a carbon that shouldn't have gone up onto the Mizbech and allows it to push it through so that the carbon could be going onto the Mizbech. This is the idea, the concept of a tzitz being meratzah. Okay, after that, the details get a little bit hazy. Okay, the concept, the basic concept is very clear, but then the details get hazy. So let's say, for example, not today's daf, it's the Gemara in Yuma. But let's say, for example, does a tzitz being meratzah, does that work when the Kohen Gadol is necessarily wearing the tzitz? Or even if, let's say, the Kohen Gadol happens not to be currently wearing the tzitz, so would it work at that point in time? The Gemara in Yuma has a debate in terms of whether or not this ritsui done by the tzitz, whether it's done only at the time of wearing, or even if put on the shelf. Right?
Also the time when it becomes stoma, no?
Right, correct. Right. In other words, there are numerous details that are not super clear in terms of exactly when it would apply. Okay, but with all that stated, for our purposes today, we just need to know the general concept of this idea that tzitz is being meratzah. What does it bring meratzah over? So that is very clear. Only one disqualification where the tzitz is able to push through, and that's the psul of tumah. It only works for tumah. It does not work for any other disqualification. In today's daf, the Gemara is going to entertain that maybe it should work for other disqualifications, but it's not the fact. It's not the case. The case is that it only is ritzui. It only creates a ritzui for tumah. That's it. Mishnah over here deals with the idea of tzitz being meratzah, and of course, because we're learning menachos, it's coming from the perspective of a mincha. Nitma hakometz, vihi krivo hatzitz meratzah. So let's say the kmitza becomes tameh. Kmitza is a food, and it's kodesh, certainly susceptible to tumah, and if before the kometz goes up onto the mizbech and burnt on the mizbech, it becomes tameh, so now we have an issue. So hikrivo, if it's offered, so the tzitz creates ritzui. So basically now the owner of this mincha will get a check. The owner of the mincha now will have successfully brought his mincha. The language of the Mishnah certainly seems to indicate, lichat chila, you should not bring it up onto the mizbech, but if done, so the tzitz creates ritzui. Yatzavi krivo, ein tzitz meratzah. The Mishnah here just gives another example of a psul. In this case, the Mishnah talks about yotze. We know that if a carbon is taken out of the azara before it's offered on the mizbech, so that's a DQ. That's a psul of yotze. And so here, let's say now, the Kometz undergoes this psul of Yotze. So the Mishnah tells us now it's no good under no circumstances. And even if the Kometz is offered on the Mizbeach, it doesn't matter. The tzitz does not create ritzui for Yotze. Shat tzitz maratz ala tamei v'en maratz ala Yotze. Tzitz serves as a ritzui for the psul of Tuma, but not for the psul of Yotze. Now, the truth of the matter is the Mishnah over here, in terms of highlighting which psul it doesn't work for, the Mishnah could really go through an entire list. Because, as we're going to be learning in the course of the Gemara, so it only works for Tumah, it works for no other psul. It is interesting that the Mishnah chooses to highlight the psul of Yotze as opposed to any other psul, but those are the facts. Rashi over here, interestingly, points out, can I eat the Shiraim? In other words, let's go back to the first case of the Mishnah, where the psul is a psul of Tumah. So interestingly, what was the case? The case was very specific. The case where the Kometz was Tameh. So because the Kometz was Tameh, Kometz was offered on the Mizbech, the Tzitz pushes it through, it gives it the Ritzui, and because the Shiraim are not Tameh, so can the Kohanim eat the Shiraim? The answer is yes. Rashi says, V'amincha k'shira v'ashiraim nechalim. As far as the Mincha now is Kasher, and because the Shiraim are not Tameh, so therefore the Kohanim can eat the Shiraim. And not can, but should. Eat the Shiraim.
Why would you think otherwise?
Maybe there's no other way to look at it, but you know, I'm highlighting a Rashi. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. V'nasa Aaron Asavan Hakadoshim. So the Torah tells us when introducing us to the tzitz and its ability to create ritzui. So the Torah says that it's able to lift up avon hakadoshim, certain sins within carbon. Okay, that's how the Torah presents it. So the Torah is just not ambiguous, just vague. Meaning, which avon are we talking about? That's the Bryce's question. V'chi eiz avon huno, same tomer avon pigol. So now the Gemara is basically going to entertain all the various psalm that we know about relating to karbanos. And basically, no, until we get to Tuma, where there's going to be yes, and we're going to see the Bryce is really interesting how it argues the point. So, im tomar avon pegol harik for nemar lo yichashev. So, if we're talking about pegol, so the Torah already tells us lo yichashev, meaning the Torah is absolutely clear that when it comes to the disqualification of pegol, that it is not considered, meaning it is disqualified. Period. Im tomar avon nosar. Now, if you're telling me that's nosar, now over here when the Gemara refers to nosar, it's not nosar as I would normally describe it. Nosar is not as we normally describe it is. Where let's say some of the meat's left over, or in the case of mincha, some of the shiraim are left over. That's not what we're talking about over here, because we're talking about the effectiveness of the karban vis-a-vis its owner. Will the owner get a check? If we're translating the word nosar over here literally, well, what has to happen for us to get to nosar? Karban was offered correctly, mincha was offered correctly. It just happens to be that the parts of it that are eaten by the kohanim are left beyond its prescribed time. That's not. In other words, in any scenario like that, of course the carbon's still good. No sir over here means pigle. Now, that's curious. The Bryce already just talked about pigle. So what we're going to have to say is that when the Bryce first introduced pigle, it meant chutzim kamo, and now as it says no sir over here in this context means chutzim mano. Okay. And by the way, then of course it's interesting how the Braisa first entertained Chutzim Kamo, which from a pigle standpoint, that's the lower level pigle, and the Braisa says, oh no, the tzitz is not going to work for that. And then the Braisa says, oh, and what about Nosar? Nosar over here meaning Chutzim Mano? That's also no. And it's interesting because from a Kal V'chomer standpoint, if the tzitz is not going to work for Chutzim Kamo, certainly the tzitz is not going to work for Chutzim Mano, but okay, fine. But anyway, that's how we're going to have to translate Nosar over here. Parenthetically, Tosus makes this point. Agreed. So as far as the other form of Nosar, meaning Chutzis Mano, Pigol Chutzis Mano, so once again, the Torah says with perfect clarity, Lo Yeretze, it's simply unacceptable. Nothing will allow it, nothing will accept it. It's disqualified. And so the Braisa says, so I know that it's not going to help vis-a-vis Chutzim Kamo, and I know it's not going to help vis-a-vis Chutzim Mano. What will it help for? So it'll help for Tumah. Why? Because we know already that the Torah already gives exclusions for Tumah. There are times when Tumah, when a carbon can be offered in a state of Tumah. Notably, Tumah Hosher B'Tzibur. That when I have the majority of the community being Tameh, so now a carbon could be brought in that state of Tumah. The source of this is a carbon Pesach, but it's true for any carbon Tzibur. That if the majority of the community are Tameh, so Tumah could be brought, a carbon Tumah could be brought in that state of Tumah. So since we have already exclusions in Tumah, so we see already that Tumah is more pliable, Tumah is more flexible. So therefore, when we know that the tzitz creates a ritzui, so it must be that the ritzui created by the tzitz is vis-a-vis Tumah. Ad kan divrei ha-braisa. So now the braisa over here entertains other disqualifications, but quite frankly, the braisa only entertains outside of Tumah only two other disqualifications, and quite frankly, it's 1A and 1B. It's chutzum kamo and chutzum zmano. So masif la rev zerei ma'avon yotzei. So now the Gemara is going to fill in, what about all the other types of psulim that relate to a carbon? So what about the psul of yotzei? Shehutu mechala b'mama. Now, over here, let's use the logic of the braisa. The braisa says, why do we think that, not think, why do we know that the tzitz creates ritzui as it relates to the psul of tumah? It's a function of the fact that there are other exclusions. So you know what? When it comes to the psul of yotzei, there also are other exclusions. Notably, that in the time when there was a heter bama, so we were allowed to offer karbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And when we offered on a bama, so there was no perimeter, meaning where could you take the karban? Wherever you'd like. So we know that there's no concept as it relates of yotzei as it relates to a bama. So we see that there are exclusions of yotzei. So now, let's take the argument to the Braisa and just simply plug it in. Amar le'abaye, amakra l'ratzon, lahem l'fnei Hashem. Avon d'l'fnei Hashem in, avon d'yotzei lo. So the Gemara says no, because if you go back to the pasuk regarding the tzitz and its ability to create ritzui, so the Torah says it creates ratzon, it creates ritzui, lifnei Hashem. And so that means to say that the Torah contextualizes and tells us that the only time that the tzitz was able to push through a carbon is only when it's lifnei Hashem. Once it exits the azara, it's no longer lifnei Hashem, and therefore the tzitz can't create ritzui. Maskevla Rabbi Eli Ema Avon Smol. What about the disqualification of the left hand? As we have learned time and again, back in Tzvachim, and we repeated the discussion already in Menachos, and that is the idea that a Kohen cannot use his left hand. A Kohen, first of all, can't be a lefty. But aside from that, a Kohen can use his left hand to do the avoda. And if a Kohen uses his left hand for the avoda, so it is pasul. However, to this psul, there's an exclusion, notably Yom Kippur. Shehutar michlala b'yom ha-kippurim. We know that that when the Kohen Gadol is doing the Avodah on Yom Kippur, specifically, when bringing in the shovel of coal and the Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so the shovel is being held in the Kohen Gadol's right hand, the Ketores is being held in the Kohen Gadol's left hand, so on Yom Kippur, you can't do Avodah with your left hand. On Yom Kippur, you can't. You're allowed to. We could even say a little bit stronger. You're supposed to. Meaning that is the procedure mandated for the Kohen, that he has to use both right and left hand when serving on Yom Kippur. So you see that there's an exclusion, there's an exception. So now that we see there's an exclusion regarding Smol, so why don't we now say that the tzitz creates ritzui for other left-handed activities, other left-handed avodas. So amalei abaye amakra avon. I'm sorry, avon sh'ayabo. So the Gemara says no, because what does the word avon connote? Avon connotes something which it was eligible, and what we did is we pushed it off. Masha'in kain Yom Kippur hechsheru b'smolhu. Right, like I corrected myself just a moment ago. It's not that in Yom Kippur it was you really should do it with the right. Oh, but you know what? We'll concede on Yom Kippur with the left. No. On Yom Kippur, it's mamish, that's the way you're supposed to do it. So we can't view this as an exclusion where it's wrong, but sometimes the Torah gives allowances. On Yom Kippur, it's not wrong. On Yom Kippur, that's the correct way to do it. Okay. Rav Asher Amar, Avon HaKadoshim V'lo, Avon HaMakdishim. Rav Asher arrives at the same conclusion, but takes a different pathway. Rav Asher says, I'll tell you why we know that the tzitz is not referring to the left hand. Because when the Torah is giving us this precedent, this rule, that the tzitz creates ritzui, that's for only avon hakadashim. That's only if the psul relates to the karban, not the makdishim, not the kohen. So in other words, the psul has to be specific to the karban, not to the kohen. Amalei Rav Sima b'reid Rav Idi l'Rav Ashi v'amalei Rav Sima b'reid Rav Ashi l'Rav Ashi ve'ema avon ba'mom. So the Gemara now entertains another psul, specifically that of a blemished animal. Of course, a blemished animal cannot be brought on the Mizbeach. It is disqualified to be brought on the Mizbeach. However, the Gemara now is entertaining. I know it's disqualified, but we have the tzitz, and the tzitz creates ritzui. And once again, the Torah is not super clear about which disqualification it's referring to. And so maybe for Balmum. Now again, let's take the argument that we used earlier. We know it creates ritzui for Tumma. Why? Because there are exception exclusions to Tumma. Same thing is true with a Balmum. There are exceptions and exclusions to a Balmum. Notably, Shehut Michalal Be'ofos, the Amar, Tamus V'Zachrus Be'behema, Vein Tamus V'Zachrus Be'ofos. So the Gemara says, look, we all know that as it relates to birds offered on the Mizbeach, so although there is an idea that an animal has to be tamim, it has to be a non-blemished animal, and it has to be a zachar when it comes to carbonola, but when it comes to birds, so there's no idea of blemishes. Now, I said no idea. That's not totally true. Mm-hmm. Meaning a bird cannot be missing a limb. It can't be mechus or aver. But vis-a-vis, the subtle blemishes that would disqualify an animal are not true regarding a bird. So there is no idea of tamim as it relates to a bird. There's no idea of zachrus as it relates to a bird. Meaning if you're bringing a bird as a ola, you can only bring a bird as one of two karbanas, ola or chatas. If you're bringing a bird as an ola, so you don't have to make the determination that this bird is a male bird, which, quite frankly, for most of us here, it's impossible. Right? You need an expert for that. But, in other words, there's no need. There's no need to determine gender of the bird. So you see already that by birds there's no idea of tamim, so you see that there's an exclusion. So now the Gemara is trying to argue, so then if that's true, then now we've established that there's an exclusion, so therefore shouldn't the tzitz be meratzeh for an animal which is a balmum? Amrle alech amakra lo yeratzeh, ki lo leratzon yelachem. No, can't be. Because in Parshas Emor, when the Torah tells us about, introduces us to all the various disqualifications of an animal, so the Torah there says, "Ki lo l'ratzon yiyu lachem." It's not. There's no ritzui. There's no opportunity of ritzui as it relates to Balmum. Right? Interesting that the Torah uses the word ritzui over there, and the Torah says, "Ki lo l'ratzon," meaning that basically what the Torah is doing is saying, "I know the argument you can construct," but the Torah is saying, "But no." In other words, the argument is just simply rejected, meaning that by tamus by a Balmum, a Balmum animal cannot be brought, and the tzitz is not going to help it out. Adkan. Okay, that takes us through the first sugya of today's daf. So basically what we just learned together is this idea that when the Kohen Gadol has a tzitz, it creates ritzui, that part we know. Now that's the Torah Shebech Sav. Now today's daf, Chafeh Amar Aleph, in Menachos, we have the Torah Shebech Peh. And the Torah Shebech Peh teaches us that it only creates ritzui only for the psul of Tumah and not for any other psul. The Mishnah highlighted it's not going to work for Yotzei, and as we learn now in the course of the Gemara, it's not going to help out for any other psul as well. It's just that, now that we know that the Braisa gave a Svara in terms of why Tumah is highlighted, so we tried to take that Svara and apply to other psulim as well, but the Gemara had an answer for how we know that it doesn't apply to any of the other psulim. Tana Rabbanan.
That's when the Kohen wears it.
Right. Again, that's a machlokas. Does he have to wear it? It's the machlokas in Yuma.
Rabbi, how do we deal with the exclusion of bringing a seabor on your tummy? Oh, it's because it's the person who's tummy.
Yeah, right. Okay. And the Tana Rabbanan. Dam shenedma v'zarko. So, if the blood becomes tummy, and the Kohen were to sprinkle the blood, that is tummy. So, basically now, another application of this idea. So over here now we're talking, right? I know we're in Menachos and we're talking primarily about a mincha and a kamitza, but hu adin, meaning the rules basically play out. So you have dam that becomes tamei, and the kohen now, and the kohen sprinkles the blood on the mizbeach, bishogeg hortza, bemezid lo hortza. So if it was bishogeg, so that creates ritzui. If it was bemezid, so there is no ritzui. Now, when we use the term shogeg and mezid over here, it really could be going on one of two things. could either be going on, well, we're going to clarify in a moment, but I'm right now going to offer the possibilities. It could either be going on the dam becoming tameh. When the blood becomes tameh, so was that done b'shogeg or was that done b'mezid? So it could be that the Bryce over here is talking about the blood becoming tameh, and whether the blood was, how the blood becomes tameh is either shogeg or mezid. Or it could be talking about the kohen sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach. And that, when the Brisa says shogeg and mezid, the distinction of shogeg and mezid is talking about whether the kohen did it not knowing that the blood was tameh, or mezid, meaning that the kohen was knew it was tameh, and he sprinkled it anyway. Those are two possibilities, and as we go through the Gemara, we'll try to clarify. B'amed dvar mamorim, the Brisa continues. B'yachid, ava b'tzibar b'im b'shogeg b'im mezid hortza. Now, this distinction of shogeg versus mezid, that's only as it relates to a carbon yachid. But if it's a carbon tzibor, so then whether it was b'shogeg or whether it was b'mezid, so the tzitz is going to create ritzui. Uve ove kochavim. Now, if it relates to the carbon of a non-Jew, as we learned already numerous times, a non-Jew could bring a carbon. Rashi on the bottom of the Amud. Ove kochavim sheshilach carbono. So you have a non-Jew who sends his carbon. Non-Jew is not allowed entrance into the Beis HaMikdash, but can bring a carbon. So how does he bring a carbon? Very simple. Shlichus. So he'll just send his animal with somebody, and the Mizbeach will accept it. The Vinitma, the most famous example of a non-Jew bring, or at least trying to bring a carbon, is the Gemara's in Gittin. Regarding Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Right? So the... One of the maneuvers of Bar Kamtza was that when the Caesar brought the carbon, so he put a blemish in the carbon. Mm-hmm. So okay, anyway, and Rashi continues. So Shishil carbon of v'nitma adam, and the blood becomes tamei. Da'amina b'perek elam menachos ish mi beis Yisrael she yakriv carbon al matam alomer ish. Why does the Torah use the double language of ish? L'rabba says al v'dekocham shenojim nedarim v'nedavos ki Yisrael. That a non-Jew is allowed to bring a carbon neder or nedava, just like a Jew is allowed to bring a carbon neder or nedava. Okay, good. And when it comes to back to our Gemara, when it comes to the carbon of a non-Jew, and here, whether it was shogeg or whether it was mezid, whether it was onis or whether it was ratzon, in the context of this brisa, mezid and ratzon are synonymous terms, meaning just simply means intentional. Shogeg onis, there are distinctions to be made between shogeg and onis. Shogeg is where You forgot a halacha. Ones is you're doing something that really is, you know, you had no choice. It was against your will. But, okay, good. So there are distinctions to be made. The point of the brisa is that when it comes to a carbon being offered by a non-Jew, whether the tumah was shogeg or mezid, whether it was ones or ratzon, lo hurtza. So for that, the tzitz is not able to create ritzui. Tzitz is only able to create ritzui of a carbon of a Jew, not of a non-Jew. Okay, adkan. That takes us to the first brisa of this morning. So the brisa of this morning teaches us that when it comes to a carbon that becomes tameh, specifically the blood of a carbon that becomes tameh, so there is an allowance to offer it in a state of shogeg, but there is no allowance to offer it in a state of mezid. Good. That's brisa number one. And then a distinction between a carbon yachid versus a carbon tzibor, and a distinction between a carbon yisrael versus a carbon ovi kochavim. Fine. Viriminu. We are now on the top of Chafei Amud Beis. The Gemara says, but I'll tell you what, we have a stira. Amad sits meratza al adam ve'al abasar ve'al achelev shenitma bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid bein ba'ones bein b'ratzon bein b'yachid bein b'tzibur. The Bryce over here says that you know what the tzitz is able to create, it was able to push through, create ritzui. It's for blood, it's for the meat, it's for the chelev that becomes tameh. And the Bryce says with clarity, whether it was shogeg, whether it was mezid, whether it was ones, whether it was ratzon, whether it's an individual or whether it's communal. And so what we have over here is a simple stira between two brisas. Brisa number one says that the tzitz is meratza only for shogeg, not for mezid. Brisa number two says it's meratza for both shogeg and mezid. That is what's called a stira. How to answer the stira? So let's start today with one approach. Am Rav Yosef lo kasha ha Rav Yosef ha Rabbanan. So the Gemara's first approach for today offered by Rav Yosef is that it's a machlokas tanaim. And this machlokas tanaim just simply expresses itself in the distinction between shogeg and mezid. Consider now the following. Detan, you learned in a brisa. Okay. Detanya. Ein tormim min atam el atar v'im taram b'shogeg trumas or truma The mezid ain't trumas or truma. So, taking off truma. So, taking off truma, so, classically, what's supposed to be done is that you have grapes or wheat or olives, and could be other fruits as well, right? Vegetables as well, midirabanan. That could be other fruits. Yes, other fruits. Machlokas Rishonim, whether it's the rice or the rabban by other fruits. Rambam says all fruits. Rashi and Tosafot says no, only grapes, olives, and wheat, and the grains. Anyway, what you do is you take off a percentage to give to the Kohen. Torah doesn't give us an amount of how much to give. The Chachamim said 2%, give or take a little bit. Okay, and so now you take off the 2% of the Truma, and you give it to the Kohen. The Braisa teaches us that. What if, let's say, some of the olives, some of the grapes are tame? So here's what you should not do. Take those olives or grapes that are tame and take them, be mafresh that as your truma, hand it over to the Kohen. Kohen will not be happy with truma tamea, but when all said and done, that's what you designate as truma. And now the rest, of course, is no longer tevel. Then the rest of it is now, is mitukan. It's been rectified. And so the Braisa says, don't do it. And the Braisa goes on to say, Ein tarmim min hatame latar, v'im taram bishogeg truma so truma. Now, if it was done bishogeg, so then the truma would be a valid truma. However, b'mezid ein truma so truma, and if it was done intentionally, knowing that what you were taking off was tame, truma tamea, so if it was done b'mezid, it does not get the status of truma. Rabbi Yossi Omer, ben b'shogeg, ben b'mezid, truma so truma. And Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that whether it was done b'shogeg or whether it was done b'mezid, the truma would be a valid truma. Now, admittedly, the discussion, the debate over here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yossi is not as it relates to carbon and not as it relates to the tzitz, but in the very least, what we now get is this distinction, this machlokus, as to whether something would work b'mezid. The Tanakam says that when you're torim tamei ala tahor and you do so b'mezid, it simply does not work. And so what the Gemara now, what Rav Yosef is going to do is he's going to take that idea and transpose it now to our discussion. So that would explain the tonic, the first brisa that we saw. That if the Kohen sprinkled the Tamei blood on the Mizbeach and he did so b'mezid, it doesn't work. Just like the Tanakhama over here says that if you were to take off Truma Tamea off of the rest of the pile, so b'mezid, it won't work. And Rav Yossi then would reflect the opinion of the second Braisa. Rav Yossi that says that a filo b'mezid it works would be a reflection of the second Braisa. Gemara says, I'm not convinced that this approach is a good approach. Eimad shamalei le Rav Yossi de lo kanes de meratzit tzitz al achilos mishamaslei. So the Gemara says, wait one second. As it relates to the opinion of Rav Yossi, where there's no kanas, where there's no penalty, that is only... that's only as it relates to the ritzui done by the tzitz. But al achilos mishamaslei. But what about vis-a-vis the achila? The Hatanya, the Gemara says, consider the following braisa. Rabbi Eliezer, omer tzitz meratza al achilos. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that tzitz creates ritzui not only for the portion that is going to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, but even for the portion that's going to be consumed as well. Clarity to that will come in just a moment. Rabbi Yossi, omer, Ein hatzitz meratze al achilos, and Rav Yossi is of the opinion that the tzitz will not create ritzui, not even for the consumed portion of a karban. Okay, so I'll tell you what. What we'll do is we'll pause over here. Right, tomorrow I'll start again with Rav Yosef's answer, and I'll explain it much better in terms of this distinction between whether tzitz creates ritzui for the karban portion or even for the achila portion, and then why it is then that Rav Yosef's answer will not work out. So I'll pick it up tomorrow with Rav Yosef's answer. A quick recap. Today we finished off various topics, a couple more discussions regarding Hitzarfus, right? A third half Isaron that's in the bowl. How do we view that third half Isaron? Connected with one, connected with two, and the nature of the relationship between the two, and whether or not, if it's all in one bowl together, does that bowl create Hitzarfus? So a discussion, Machlokes between Abaye and Rava, in a particular scenario that we discussed on the Bama Chav Dalamid Beis. Chav Hei, we move on to the topic of the tzitz being meratze. Kohen Gadol tzitz is able to push through a psul, and specifically only the psul of Tuma. So why? So we learned the braisa today together on Chav Hei Aleph, that it has to do with the fact that We know that there already are exclusion exceptions as it relates to Tumah, Tumah, Hutra, but Tzibur. And so therefore, even though the Torah tells us that the tzitz is able to be no se avon, it can, you know, it can lift up a particular sin, but that's only specific to the avon of Tumah and to no other avon. On Chafei Amad Alf, the Gemara basically ran through all the various psulim. Maybe the tzitz should work for all of them, but the Gemara goes on to explain, based on Svar, based on Psukim, that it doesn't apply to the other psulim. Is the tzitz going to be maratze if done b'mezid? So right now we left ourselves off with a machlokas between Tanayim. One brisa says that the tzitz is going to be maratze only b'shogeg, but not b'mezid. And another brisa says that the tzitz will be maratze both b'shogeg and b'mezid. And so what we're going to try to do over the course of tomorrow morning, finishing up the daf, is we're going to clarify how do we look at these two brises, and is there a way to create shalom between these two brises.